From Vermont Public Radio, this is The Frequency. I'm Henry Amp.
And I'm Anna Van Dyne. It's Friday, May 29th. Today on the podcast, due to the pandemic, the Vermont judiciary is rethinking how it operates, and it's facing a huge backlog of cases.
It's going to be extremely taxing, and frankly, unless we are able to get additional help, I don't see how we can do it.
First, today's headlines.
The Vermont Health Department has identified three more cases of COVID-19, but no one is currently hospitalized with the virus, according to the department. One more person, the 55th in Vermont, has died after contracting the disease. This is the first coronavirus-related death reported in the state in nearly 2 weeks. To date, 974 people have tested positive for COVID-19, and 855 people have recovered. More than 31,000 tests have been administered since the outbreak began.
Marlborough College announced last year that it plans to merge with Emerson College in Boston and close its campus in Windham County. Now it's made a deal to sell that 500-acre campus to Democracy Builders, a group that wants to start a combination online and residential college. The nonprofit's founder wouldn't say how much it's paying for the campus. Their plan is to bring low-income and first-generation college students to Marlborough. They hope to have students and faculty there in September, depending on COVID-19 pandemic guidelines.
And Anna, we got some news yesterday that we'd been expecting for a while. Governor Phil Scott announced he is officially seeking re-election, but there is a twist. He says he won't have a campaign of any kind as long as Vermont remains in a state of emergency due to COVID-19. And this is an unusual move. So to sort out what this means for the 2020 election, I called up one of our political reporters, Pete Hirschfeld, and I asked him how this campaign might look different. And here's Pete.
Well, pretty different, Henry. Scott says Vermont is facing a once-in-a-century challenge with COVID-19, and he says Vermonters need a full-time governor who won't be distracted or influenced by the mechanics of a political campaign. And so he says he will not be mounting a traditional campaign, at least not as long as Vermont remains in a state of emergency due to COVID-19. So what does that mean? It means he won't have any campaign staff, that he won't have a campaign office, that he won't be raising money, and that he won't be participating in what he calls, quote, normal campaign events.
Okay, does that include even participating in debates?
So that is the biggest question that this announcement begs. I'm sorry to report that I haven't been able to get an answer. Brittany Wilson was Scott's campaign manager in 2018. She actually also serves in the administration now. She did not respond to my request for an interview today. Scott has a director of communications in the agency of administration. And this morning I asked her who I should be directing media inquiries to related to Scott's campaign announcement. And she told me there's no one to direct me to
because there's literally
no campaign. Another question I have, Henry, is Scott says he won't be raising money, but will he be accepting donations? I'm not the only reporter looking for answers to these questions, and I'm guessing he'll get a lot of questions to this effect, Phil Scott, that is, at his thrice weekly press briefings that he's holding. So perhaps we'll get some clarity then. But one thing to keep in mind as we talk about this, Henry, is even if Scott doesn't have a campaign apparatus himself, there will be plenty of campaign material going out to voters on his behalf. The Republican Governors Association spent nearly $4 million on Scott's first two runs for governor. They've already bankrolled a re-election ad on his behalf during this cycle. So as a relatively popular incumbent with a lot of well-financed friends in Washington, D.C., Phil Scott can afford to eschew politics right now in a way that other candidates probably cannot.
Well, how are the other candidates, both on the Democratic side and Republican side, who are challenging Scott, reacting to his announcement?
I talked to John Klar earlier today. He's Phil Scott's lone challenger in the Republican primary. He said he's afraid Scott is going to use the coronavirus pandemic as an excuse to skip out on debates. He says he views those debates as a critical way to show the contrast between him and Scott, particularly on economic issues. And he says it'd be an affront to the democratic process if Scott refuses to engage in those debates. Some Democrats are also voicing concern. Pat Winburn is one of three Democrats running for the chance to face off against Phil Scott in the general election. He said he worries Scott's announcement signals an unwillingness to engage in the kind of voter interaction, especially debates, that Vermonters have come to expect from their candidates for office. So we will find out what exactly this is going to mean for the democratic process between now and November.
All right. That's VPR reporter Peter Hirschfeld. Pete, thanks so much.
Thank you, Henry.
And also in election news, Anna, a former Republican nominee for governor announced yesterday that he's joining the crowd of candidates for lieutenant governor this year. Scott Milne will run for the Republican nomination for that office. He almost unseated former Governor Peter Shumlin back in 2014, and then he ran unsuccessfully for U.S. Senate against Patrick Leahy in 2016. He's the second candidate to declare a run on the Republican side for lieutenant governor, along with Meg Hansen, and at least four Democrats are also running.
All right, and now we're going to go to court, but just to see what's going on. Courts in Vermont, like pretty much all sectors of society during the pandemic, have been forced to rethink their operations. State courts have been in a judicial emergency since mid-March. Most hearings have been postponed, and public access has been severely limited. But as the coronavirus infections in the state have declined, the Vermont judiciary is preparing to ramp up activity. Reporter Liam Elder Connors recently visited criminal court in Chittenden County, and he has this story.
The courthouse is a couple of blocks away from Church Street in Burlington, and usually snagging a parking spot in front of the building is impossible. But on a recent visit, I had my pick.
Just put my mask on. I do not remember the last time I was here. It's definitely been at least 2 months, probably longer than that.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm a reporter.
There's a red rope across the front entrance, and a security guard in a mask sits at a small desk in the entryway. He pulls out a clipboard and starts reading me a list of questions.
Past few days, have you felt unwell, especially the respiratory symptoms? Cough, high temperature, shortness of breath, difficulty breathing, initial flu-like symptoms such as fever, coughing, breathing difficulties, or fatigue?
No.
In the past 14 days, have you been in contact with anyone that you're aware of that may have had the virus?
No.
Have you been to another country?
Nope.
Have you been to a healthcare facility, a hospital, walk-in clinic, or emergency room where people infected are being treated?
No.
All right.
The guard waves me in, and I send my backpack through the scanner and walk through the metal detector. That's one part of the screening that's always been there. Usually there's a steady stream of people coming in and out of the building, but not today. The place seems deserted. None of the buzz of attorneys in the halls or people milling around before their hearing.
It's kind of weird, kind of eerie.
While the courts have been open during the pandemic, their operations have been limited to emergency hearings. Things like bail review for people in jail, domestic assault arraignments, and changes of pleas.
Media?
Yep.
Okay.
Thanks.
And then get set up right here.
A little after 2 p.m., I'm ushered into one of the smaller courtrooms. There's a large TV on one wall showing the face of the defendant, a man with short brown hair and a goatee. The defendant was at Northern State Correctional Facility. He was arrested in early May, and in today's proceedings, he'll plead guilty to a misdemeanor resisting arrest charge. Besides the judge and two court staffers, I'm the only person in the room. The lawyers, like the defendants, are miles away.
And do I gather we have counsel on the phone?
Things start off with a slight technological glitch. Margaret Jantz, the public defender, is having trouble with the connection.
I would like to note for the record that it's very poor reception.
A court officer springs up and offers to merge Jantz onto the same phone as the prosecutor. Judge Thomas Carlson, wearing a mask, perks up and endorses the plan.
Let's do that.
These sorts of stops and starts could become more common as the courts expand operations on June 1st and rely more on remote hearings, with attorneys on the phone and, depending on the case, defendants at the courthouse or appearing from jails via video. The judiciary is also advising courts to adjust their schedules, stagger cases, and find other ways to reduce the amount of people in the building to comply with social distancing and public health guidelines. Jury trials are on hold until September in criminal cases and January 2021 in civil court. The judicial system also faces another looming challenge, a backlog of cases that have built up during the last 2.5 months.
We expect a flood of new cases coming in.
Chief Superior Judge Brian Grierson told the Senate Judiciary Committee this month that courts would prioritize cases involving children and incarcerated people. Retired judges would also be brought in, and other judges would be reassigned.
Meaning judges that are sometimes doing civil matters will end up assisting the backlog in those dockets.
Criminal defendants have a constitutional right to a speedy trial, and there's concern that even if the courts add resources, there won't be enough attorneys to handle the caseload. John Campbell, the executive director of the Department of State's Attorneys and Sheriffs, says they're down 6 deputies across the state. He says they might use contract attorneys to help fill the gaps.
The number of cases that we're going to see, it's going to be extremely taxing. And frankly, unless we are able to get additional help in these offices, I don't see how we can do it.
That may lead to changes in what prosecutors are willing to charge. Chittenden County State's Attorney Sarah George says she's told her staff to review their cases for ones that could be dismissed or diverted to other avenues, like a restorative justice program.
We need to be really diligent about making sure that the cases we're focusing on are the most serious cases that we have.
It's hard to know how busy courts will be. Police have been arresting a lot less people in recent months, and prisons have reduced their population by nearly 17%. But public defenders are also short-staffed, according to Defender General Matt Valerio. He says he'll have to assess which counties need the most help. And he says the large caseloads shouldn't be an excuse to move through cases quickly.
These are people's lives, and to them, this is the most important thing that they have going. And we got to make sure that we do a good job. We can't just say, oh, you're in the door, and now everybody pleads guilty and everybody's out the door. There are people who have legitimate beefs with whatever law enforcement did or charging the prosecutor.
Ms.
Jantz?
Yes, I can hear you.
Back in the Chittenden County courtroom with the phones working, the hearing goes smoothly. The defendant pleads guilty to resisting arrest and is sentenced to 18 to 20 days. It all takes about 20 minutes.
I believe that concludes this hearing.
With that, everyone departs. The video screen blinks off. There's a small beep as Jantz and the deputy state's attorney hang up their phones. Judge Carlson murmurs a quiet take care and walks out of the room. The court officer looks over at me and with a shrug says, there is no more. For VPR News, I'm Liam Elder Connors.
And now a look at the Eye on the Sky forecast for today. It's going to be cloudy with rainstorms in the afternoon, highs in the 80s.
Thanks for listening to The Frequency. You can get in touch with us at, Thanks for listening to The Frequency today. You can get in touch with us at our email address, thefrequency@vpr.org. We had reporting today from Liam Elder Connors, Peter Hirschfeld, and Howard Weiss-Tisman.
Our music is by Blue Dot Sessions, and our executive producer is Mark Davis. I'm Anna Van Dyne.
And I'm Henry Epp. Talk to you on Monday.
Well, I wonder what you're going to add. What were you going to ad-lib?
I was just trying to say, I don't know. I was... just trying to jazz up the email line a little bit.